Hello, everyone. Hope Monday is treating you well. This is the Soccer Central podcast. James Sharman here, alongside, as always on Monday, John Molinaro. It's a busy, busy week, Champions League-wise, of course, and we'll get to some of that later in today's show with Bobby the Brains McMahon, J-Mo, but we'll start with the weekend recap, as it were. And the Premier League is getting more and more interesting at both ends of the table. Chelsea do enough that they get through, albeit very late, against a really good QPR team in recent weeks, actually.
Yes.
15 chances QPR contrived to miss, essentially. Whereas Chelsea, they got one shot on goal, 88th minute, goal, 1-0, 3 points. Yeah. Given what happened in the Manc derby, given that Arsenal won once again, that was a big late goal for Cesc Fabregas, huh?
Absolutely huge, yeah. It's interesting, too, because I think he was about to come out. Mourinho was about to make the sub, and then, you know, Fabregas pulled off that, so his timing couldn't have been better. But you know what? Full credit to QPR. I mean, going into this one, I know that they played well in recent weeks, but I just really thought Chelsea was going to lay down a marker here and really just burn the hoops. And
ouch, that sounds really painful.
Well, you know, but you know, full credit to QPR. They were really well organized for most of the match. That final, I mean, that result was harsh on them. I think, you know, a point probably would have been. They would have been deserving of a point. So it's unfortunate that it ended like that. Also unfortunate that, you know, some idiot fans were throwing, I think, bottles and coins at the Chelsea players.
Ivanovic got nailed, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, that's a bit unfortunate. I understand the frustration, but I think when stuff like that, when you let your emotions get the better of you, like that, and it degenerates into throwing missiles, it's I don't know. I have very little tolerance for that kind of nonsense.
Is it time that Chelsea did throw down a marker at some point? Because they are just not playing well. And you look at their results, the last number of results, okay? Regardless of wins or losses, mainly wins, though. But 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, 1-1, 2-2, 1-0, 2-0, 1-1, 1-1, 1-0, 2-1, 1-0. Oh, there's a 4-2, January 24th,
who was
cup
against
Bradford.
Oh, okay.
And they lost. They lost 4-2.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
They lost the 4-2 game.
Right.
1-1. Yeah, this team. And then prior to, I guess around about January is when it kind of wasn't derailed, but they began playing poorly. But prior to that, they won 5-0, 3-0, 2-0.
Right.
Lost 5-3 to Spurs, of course, on January the 1st. But they are doing enough. They're grinding out results, but boy, it is not pretty to watch, is it?
It's not convincing, is it? I mean, they're going to be champions of England, but, you know, it's interesting. I haven't been entirely impressed with them. I think they've, as you said it quite correctly, James, they've done what they've had to do. They had to do just enough. And I suppose, in a sense, look, you have to give them credit for that. It's tough balancing, you know, European commitments, FA Cup commitments, although they're no longer in the FA Cup, but... So, and that this is Mourinho's MO, right? It's just kind of win at any cost. And yeah, it might not be all that pretty to watch or entirely convincing.
But they've earned this because of their early season form, right?
They've been the most consistent.
Blew teams away and were great.
They've been the most consistent team. So I know it's not, as I said, they're not blowing teams away and they're not winning with champagne football or stylish football, but, you know, they're doing what they have to do and that's enough. It doesn't endear them to, I think, the neutral, though. Let's be clear.
No, it doesn't, though. No.
I don't think any neutral is going to be celebrating or suggesting this is, you know, one of the best Premier League teams of all time.
But for a while there, we thought they might be.
It's funny,
the first two months of the season.
Yeah, we certainly did.
We sat here and said, "My God,
can they go this season?
Undefeated."
Yeah. Well, it's
a long season.
You know how quickly things change, right?
7 points up on Arsenal, plus a game in hand. Now the next two games are against Manchester United this weekend on Sportsnet.
On Sportsnet,
and then Arsenal. So let's just say United find a way to win this weekend. Let's just say Arsenal beat them the week after at the Emirates. You know, conceivable, because both those teams are playing really good soccer right now. Mm-hmm. That gap could be reduced, but, you know, 7 points, game in hand, it doesn't matter really what happens in those games because they've done enough as it is.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, anything is possible, right? I mean, it could very well be that they might only be a point up by the time.
Well, I mean,
after that,
what point do we say it's a stretch run? Right now, there's, eight games left or thereabouts? Games?
I think we can say
we're in the stretch run now?
Yeah, I think so.
The run-in?
Yeah, I think so. Anytime you've got less than 10 games, I think that constitutes being the run-in.
All right.
Sure.
In that case, these are huge games then. After that, Leicester. And they got Palace, Liverpool, West Brom, and Sunderland to round out the season. So yeah.
That's Chelsea's schedule?
Yeah.
Wow, that could be that final game for Sunderland could be massive because...
Yeah. Hopefully they're done by then.
Well, hopefully they go down.
Go away.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's been an awful team to watch this year. And losing 4-1 to Crystal Palace this weekend.
Boy, that was... man.
Ugly. Good for Palace, though.
Very good for Palace. I don't think Alan Pardew gets enough credit. I mean,
I 100% agree.
You know, I think he's done a really excellent job with the Eagles and looks like they're staying up. So good for them.
What is it about that team? It's whenever push comes to shove, they make a late managerial change. They just start playing not just good football, but really good football.
Yeah.
Yannick Bolasie with a hat trick.
Fabulous. I mean, and was it 11 minutes, 17 minutes, something like that?
Yeah. They got 4 goals in 14 minutes, including the hat trick.
Okay.
And yeah, there was some poor defending, but. They were nice finishes. Two of those especially were great finishes.
Well, the last one, too, you know, he kind of kept his composure and he kind of fought off whatever it was, like
pylons.
Two defenders. Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing, but still.
Good on him for finishing that hat trick off.
Can't believe we're talking about Sunderland, Crystal Palace before even discussing the Manc Derby, Jamie.
Yeah, well.
Great performance by United, wasn't it?
Fabulous.
First 15 minutes, I thought, well, that's the City we expect to see. They were really good. Then something happened. And United turned it on through their talisman, Ashley Young.
I know, eh? Who would have thought? I mean, we'd be after watching that match saying, Ashley Young kept Angel Di Maria out of the starting 11. And it was probably, you know, you could see why he did.
Best player in the field.
Absolutely. Best performance. I thought Fellaini played pretty well as well.
He did. He's a beast. He is a beast. He wins everything in the air.
Yeah.
There's a great article I read by Jonathan Wilson last week in The Guardian, I think it was, talking about Fellaini's role at United and how it's changed so much and how he's this deep-lying playmaker now.
Right.
You know, he collects the ball in the midfield but wins aerial balls and those big long diagonals from Valencia
over
and over again, but he wins it every single time.
Oh, absolutely.
And they try and isolate the fullback, especially, you know, in the box. And when you have Gael Clichy against Marouane Fellaini, there's only going to be one winner.
Right.
Right? Very impressive.
I mean, I still think he's a bit of a liability defensively. And when you look at when City was in possession, he's just a pylon out there. But absolutely. Going forward, I mean, he offers them a big body up front. And it's a physical presence. And on those crosses, as you said, there's only one guy who's going to come out the winner on them.
And here we are talking about the renaissance at United and it's Fellaini and Young as catalysts. Well, I mean, two of the catalysts.
Yeah, in this game.
We know Carrick's playing. Well, more than that, last few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, Young's been very, very good. Yeah. I tweeted out, I don't know what was in that bird crap Ashley Young ate earlier this season, but I want some. It's been favorited 43 times so far.
Oh, there you go.
One of my most popular tweets, I have to say. But since that bird crapped in his mouth, I forget what game that was. Anyway, since then, he's turned it on. It's like superpowers.
Yeah.
It's like he's eaten like Spider-Man spider or something.
Were you surprised by City?
No, because they've been poor for a number of weeks now.
Yeah.
They've been really poor.
Right.
And their top players seem to have just lost interest. Yaya was once again a passenger out there.
Yeah.
Aguero can do only so much by himself. Silva needs people beside him to create space for him. And that's why Yaya was that man last year. Not getting the job done this time around. Just poor company again.
A
rash challenge. Should have been a red card. Did his
body
on the play, not enough injured, you know. I don't know. You can blame Pellegrini. And blame the veterans, but there's got to be a big change there because they were just, I mean, outside the first 15, 20 minutes where they looked pretty decent, they just quit.
Yeah. Do you think, and I know you wrote about this in the blog last week, but wholesale changes, does this need minor tweaking? Like,
no,
would you do
changes.
It's wholesale? Yeah. Like, so who has to go here?
We did that on Thursday's podcast. We went
man by man,
actually. And we picked 7 to 8 veterans who probably should leave.
Really? Seven or eight? That much? Wow. Yeah. That's
a big
purge.
The whole squad. Right.
Well, still, that's a pretty big bird.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. Well, I mean, who do you?
I would say
keep. Who do you keep? Right. Aguero. Obviously you keep.
Aguero, you have to keep. I mean, when I look at the guys who you have to go, I'd probably say Company. I'd probably say, who else?
Yaya.
Yeah, Touré. Probably Milner.
Not by any fault of his own. I think he's actually been playing pretty well this year.
Nasri.
I had Nasri gone for sure. Navas, whether it's been misused, hasn't got the job done.
Yeah. I mean,
Di Michaelis.
Oh, definitely. Gone. Yeah, definitely Di Michaelis.
Sanya. Wrong side of 30 now. You've got Zabaleta on the right side, who I think should stay.
I don't know. I'd keep Sagna, and I'd definitely keep Zabaleta.
So, yeah.
Mangala is an interesting one because I know they've heavily invested in him, and I don't think we've
32
quite...
32 million.
Yeah, and I don't think we've quite seen what he is yet, so I wouldn't be so quick to purge him yet. But
But it's time for a change.
And, yeah, no doubt. And does Pellegrini move on too? That's
whether he should, I think he will.
Do you think he should, though?
I'm a fan of Pellegrini, actually.
Me too.
And I think he's been let down by his veterans.
Yeah.
You know, he's tactically, he seems to be on it most games. But when Yaya's walking around with his head down, looking at the grass, upset, angry, and his captain's making rash challenge after rash challenge. Company actually is an interesting one because I said I'd keep him around just because he's 28. He's had an awful year, we know that. But a year ago, he was considered one of the top centre-backs in world football.
See, but only I never bought ago. That, though.
No?
No, I never thought he was among the elite. I think maybe I tend to think of like top players in each category, whether it be midfield, goalkeeper, I tend to think of them in sort of tiers.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Sure.
You know, Messi and Ronaldo, tier one, and then below you've got like a second tier of class. I always place Company in that second tier. I never thought he was among the best center backs. And maybe that's just
for whatever reason. But if we look around Europe now, how many truly world-class center backs are
very
there?
Very few, I think.
Right?
Very few.
So given that and what's available, there aren't that many who are better a year ago, not so much now.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you look at, say, 10 years ago when we had this wealth of wonderful centre-backs in world football.
Right.
Perhaps not, but he was very good in their championship runs.
Yeah.
But, hey, it's subjective.
Yeah. And you know what? Players have off years sometimes.
Yep.
I mean, they really
do. He's been hurt a lot.
He has been hurt. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, I think he's been very poor this year. I mean, just positioning-wise and tactically, I think he's been out to sea. So, yeah, that's an interesting one for Man City, whether they, you know, if... I can understand the point about, you know, you kind of stick with him because of the age and it's, you know, it's 1 year. Is that really a sign that he's lost his touch? But
you know who he is? He's Dion Phaneuf. He's a captain.
Yeah.
Who's not leading.
Yeah.
He's having a dreadful campaign. Was maybe not quite as good as we thought he was.
Right.
When he signed the big deal. He's Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah.
Vincent Kompany is Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah.
I know you love the hockey references in these podcasts, JMO, but that's what he is.
As long as it's not baseball, I don't care.
Still, United rampaging. Is that six straight wins now, I believe?
Five or six, yeah.
Yeah, around there.
Good for that.
In third place, 4 points up on Man City now. So now the race is not so much for third place, it's for fourth place. Liverpool play later today against Newcastle at Anfield, I believe. Given Newcastle's form, let's say they win that one, 57 points. City 4 points up on Liverpool. And don't rule out Southampton just yet, because right now, as we speak, they are fifth. Having beaten Hull this weekend 2-0. They won't go away.
Right.
Southampton's like a bad smell.
That's nice. So Liverpool can move within a point by the end
of the
day?
No, 4 points.
Move at 4 points.
Yeah, okay. If they win today, they're on
I got you.
57 and they're four back of City.
Still doable.
City keep continuing, and bear in mind that City's schedule is as follows. Come on, interweb. Here we go. City have West Ham next weekend, who are playing poorly. Then it's Villa, but it's at Man City. But Villa are a little renewed under Tim Sherwood. Then a home a game against Spurs at White Hart Lane, QPR, Swansea, and they end up against Southampton.
Mm.
Last game of the year, Southampton, who, as it stands at this moment in time, are their main rivals for fourth place.
Right. Wow. So not a lock.
No. Not a lot to choose from that. But I think City are going to find a way, as much as they're playing badly, and they've lost 6 of 8 now, I think it is. They can't be this bad for much longer. Sure.
I wouldn't think
enough
so.
Enough at least to keep that 4-point gap.
Yes, at least. Right? Yeah, I would think.
Yeah. We'll see. But they've been quite the decline. I don't know what it was, what moment it was where they came off the rails.
Well, I think the Champions League failure certainly had a lot to do with it. And I think that's such a psychological blow, right? Because the way that they were mishandled by Bayern.
Yeah.
I think that sort of just sapped the confidence out of them, and it was really, you know, just another letdown.
Did you see Villa beating Spurs?
I saw highlights, yeah.
Christian Benteke was an absolute monster in
that
game.
Was that was so a good. Great finish. Oh, wow.
Was it ever? Yep.
Right in the corner off the post. Like the goalkeeper had
no
chance.
You try and stop that, though.
No.
Right? If you're a defender, you try and stop that guy coming at you at that pace in the box. My God, he's a beast.
Yeah.
Really is. 5 goals in his last three games.
Well, it's coming on at the right time. Yep. I mean, they need him.
Well, we were talking on the show on Saturday with Jerry and Craig how Paul Lambert obviously struggled this year. They couldn't score goals.
Right.
But Christian Benteke was hurt with the Achilles injury, came back, obviously takes a long time to recover from that injury, wasn't there. Shua takes over just at the right time as Benteke finds his form, his health and his confidence, starts putting in goals. And what a huge difference. They've scored as many goals in 10 games under Sherwood, I believe, as it was in the entire season prior to that under
Lambert.
And in no small part is that man, Christian Benteke, who's done a great, great job. Nice to see Tim Sherwood too go back to Spurs and stick it to them. I think he was mistreated there a little bit by the ownership, don't you think?
Yeah, it was a little, I think he got screwed over a little bit. So yeah. It was nice. I mean, he handled it quite with a great deal of class and grace, sure. I thought. So it was good for him.
Spurs have fallen off the rails a bit, haven't they?
Yeah, they sure have.
But what surprised me, very young team, youngest average starting 11 in the Premier League this season.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
interesting.
So, you know, you see the inconsistencies there and you wonder, well, you know, there isn't much experience in that 11.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is it just me or is Christian Eriksen really kind of fallen off?
He has a little bit, yeah.
Him and Kane
are still the most dangerous outlets for them, but
sure,
he's nothing like he was earlier in the season.
No, I don't think so. Not anywhere near. I wonder what it was, if it's just fatigue or if he's been kind of found out a little bit. I wonder.
Perhaps, yeah. But again, this is an inexperienced player. He's 23.
Yeah.
And you go into the
Premier
League
for
the first time, and it's a tough slog in the Premier League. It's
absolutely
so physical compared to what you used to.
Right.
And I think he's a smart enough footballer. He'll figure it out. And if he's going to add something to his game, he will. But I think it's probably just fatigue. He looks tired out there.
Yeah, it could.
Kane looks a bit tired. And they make Kane captain again for the second straight game.
Yeah, I saw that.
I know Vertonghen's out hurt. And obviously so is Lloris. But it's been such an amazing year for Harry Kane. So much on him right now, on his shoulders. Why would you do that as well?
Put the added pressure on him.
You know? Yeah. I think it's unnecessary.
Yeah, that's a point. I've always felt this whole idea of captains is kind of ridiculous in sports. I've never really sort of bought the importance. And I know, I won't go into it, but
it's important if you have
sure,
a great
if you're
captain.
The captain.
If you have a great an Alan
sure.
Shearer, a Mark Messier, if you have that guy, then that can be very important. But
sure.
there aren't many of those guys around.
Right.
So just giving the guy a C or the armband for the sake of it. I mean, yeah, what does it do?
What does it mean? Yeah, exactly. Craig Forrest had a great line about this because I remember asking about, you know, the value of captains because, you know, he played for some pretty big clubs in England and for Canada, never captained Canada. But he said, you know, why do you want just one captain? You want 11 captains out there. Like, why would you heap that responsibility on one person? I would think you'd want 11 people out there to have that sort of leadership. So the captain's armband doesn't make leaders.
Didn't Amy Lawrence say in this very podcast a few weeks back, the Arsenal's Invincibles had 11 captains? And
that's a very good point.
No doubt about that.
They were
all great leaders.
Yeah, that's true.
All could have been a captain elsewhere.
Yeah.
But that's a rarity to get those. That
I don't know
players.
That Perez could have been a captain anywhere else.
Maybe not.
And I like Robert
I don't
Perez.
Know. I mean, I've never played at a high level of sport, but I played enough sports teams. And I've been on teams where there is a captain who is like the voice of the team, an older veteran guy who the young guys can look up to. It meant something to me. And that's very amateur sport.
Right.
Right. I can see it being a role, but it's not the be all and end all, that's for sure.
That's all I'm saying. I think
it's blown out of proportion.
It's blown way out of proportion, in my view.
Yeah. Arsenal beat Burnley 1-0. Ground out another result. You must love seeing Arsenal grind out results because they weren't doing that before.
Yeah, I know. They're always kind of focused on, you know, winning pretty and kind of walking the ball into the net. So it's nice that they're just kind of getting the job done. So
just wait till hopefully next year. Wait till next year, Jim. Yeah. How many times have you heard that?
Yeah, too many times lately. Yeah. So
let's switch gears to MLS quickly before we bring on Bobby to talk some Champions League. Portland, they fell to Orlando 2-0. Kyle Larin, just want to mention that, scored a goal.
Yeah, good
Orlando.
For him.
Yep.
The Canadian
boy.
Kid. Yeah.
Yep. Houston beat Montreal 3-0.
Man,
Impact are winless in the season, but they're in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
Great story. And now they've gone out and signed Kenny Cooper.
Yeah, at 30 years old. It's
you wrote
it's
about this on the website today.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, James. It comes across to me as a bit desperate because he was kind of a bit player in Seattle last year. He's many years removed from his best seasons in MLS. They never did sort of replace Marco DeVio in the offseason after he retired. So, you know, why they didn't bring in a more proven goal scorer before this? Why they couldn't get this done until week 5 into the season? I mm-hmm. I don't know. It just really reeks of desperation on my part. I hope Kenny Cooper proves me wrong, because he is a good, like when he was on form, he's a very good player. Always used to score against TFC. And I think he'll give them a physical presence, because that game against Houston, Montreal was quite good going forward and putting together passing sequences in the final third, but end product wasn't there. And like, mm-hmm. you know, you just Jack McInerney, just a little guy. So they weren't even kind of crossing into the box because, you know, he's not going to win it. So I think that'll rectify this. And Cooper is kind of more of a clinical finisher. So I'll be interested to watch this, but yeah, they were pretty bad against Houston.
I know Joe Saputo's a bit concerned about being a repeat of last season.
Well, he should be.
Yeah,
he should be.
Still, if they, you know, win the Champions League, they can just dismiss this season anyways.
Just write it off.
A success. Yeah. Right? You're not going to be relegated, are you?
Yeah, I'm not sure how well that would go over with the fan base in Montreal. I think they're pretty tired about.
What are your thoughts, honestly, about Club America? First game at the Azteca.
They're a very good team. And I'll say this. I don't think the Azteca is the fortress that it once was. Because when you look at, you know, Jamaica, Honduras, the United States, they all picked up points. And I think Honduras beat Mexico in the last round of World Cup qualifying. So it's still an intimidating place. Don't get me wrong. I really think, though, Club America, when they want to, they can absolutely lay the hammer down. And you've got to think that they're going to do that in the opening leg, that they're not going to sort of go about this not in a nonchalant fashion, that they're really going to take this seriously and just really beat down Montreal. I think Uribe Peralta is just a wonderfully gifted player, and I think he's going to be at his absolute finest. So if Montreal can kind of limit the damage, I think just keep it. Even if they lose 1-0, then I think that's massive.
So 45,000 seats have been sold for the return leg at the Big O.
Yeah.
That's great.
Good for them. Fantastic. I mean, and they sold out those tickets in like less than 48 hours. So, and this during a time where, you know, the Canadians are the talk of of the city. They're gearing up for a playoff run.
They could be gone by then for the playoffs, right?
They could be, although I think, we've pissed off our Montreal fans. I think the game, it actually might, I haven't seen the schedule, but I think same there night. Could be some overlap. Ooh, yeah, like game six conflicts. Or game seven. So it'll be interesting. Wow.
So what will Sportsnet do, I wonder? You know, will they put the Habs on Sportsnet or the Impact?
Well, I think the Habs will be on CBC.
I know. I'm just joking. So. Not very funny, obviously. But
no, obviously not.
Vancouver, they lost 1-0 to San Jose. Probably the worst display of the season.
Terrible. Vancouver. Yeah, they were pretty insipid. There wasn't much going on there. Pedro Morales, I don't know. Did you see the incident or no?
It was just stupid.
I think it was stupid.
For me, it was a red card.
Yeah.
You know, he did the first like little kick with the ball, which I could forgive him for.
But then he did it again.
And then just the way he lost it.
Yeah.
And was in, is it Johnson in his face?
Yeah, then he got in John's face like a couple times and he had to be pulled off.
Yeah, so it was like, what are you doing, man? Just calm down.
Yeah.
Calm down. It wasn't that bad a embellishment.
No. I will say this. I mean, it might actually be a blessing in disguise because he's going to be suspended for the Real Salt Lake game on Saturday. And you know, last year, Pedro Morales was very good at home, but not so well on the road. So, you know, maybe they did play 3 games in 8 days. So maybe Robinson, you know, this is a nice enforced change that he has to make because he can kind of rotate his squad in a little bit.
But yeah, perhaps.
They were pretty uninspiring, especially going forward. And Octavio Rivero, I'm not blaming him at all, but didn't get even a sniff of goal. Like nothing.
Is he still the league leader?
I think so.
Still with 5?
Yeah, 5 goals. So. Yeah. But, you know, he just didn't have any service and he was totally isolated up front. So it was a quiet night for him. And Matias Laba, you know, partially to blame on the San Jose goal with the giveaway. So
he's allowed one giveaway a year, isn't he?
I would think so. He's still,
pretty
for my money, one of the
gives away.
Yeah. For my money, he's still one of the best, if not the best, defensive midfielder in Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just, you know, it's one of those things. It was a bad performance, but they're still top of the Western Conference. So it's good to see Vancouver doing so well.
Well, let's switch gears from MLS to the Champions League. J-Mo, take it away. The song. Sing.
Oh. We are the champions.
Nice. That's
I love that song.
I'm never, ever going to ask you to sing that again.
I love that song, dude.
God, you're like a prepubescent child. Big games, obviously, as the quarterfinals kick off. We're joined now by the man, the myth, the legend, Bobby the Brains McMahon. Hey, Bobby.
Yes, but thank you for that introduction, James. But the one thing I'm not is a singer.
So neither am I. We should not. Apparently, so
which you've proved already, John.
Yes,
I shan't ask you to sing then. I like these games. There's not a bad one among them. It's brilliant. Atletico Real Madrid tomorrow, that's Tuesday, on Sportsnet at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be something pretty special. Atletico beat Leverkusen on pens last time out, whereas Real scraped by Schalke after losing in the second leg. Sticking with Atletico right now, though, they've owned Real Madrid this season, Bobby. 6 games, 4 wins, 2 draws. They seem to have them, you know, really figured out. But do they have a chance in this one?
Oh, yeah. I think they've got to, James, with the form this year. And to be honest, even the form last year was great results against Real Madrid as well. The one that they didn't go their way, of course, was the Champions League final. And, you know, even now, I think we've become so fixated on final results, it's easy to forget how close Atletico came last year.
Yeah, very close.
Like, that was a goal, what was it, 2-3 minutes into added time before they equalised? You know, Atletico really... you got to think that Simeone is using that as a bit of a motivator as well. The fact that Atletico came so close, there must have been tasting that champagne coming out of the cup last year when Ramos got the equaliser. So you look at that, you look at the record this year, you look at, you know, I think it was probably unrealistic to think that they could have another run at the title after losing some key players. But they've made a pretty good fist of it, and they've got some players that are playing very well. Griezmann is obviously having a tremendous season, and carries a great threat, I think, to Real Madrid.
I believe Mandzukic. There you go. Thank you, James.
Yes, him as well.
Yes. Believe he's out for the first leg through injury. What kind of loss is this for Atletico, do you think, Bobby?
It's on the face of it, you know, you take a player of that quality out, but you've got the re-emerging legend that is Fernando Torres.
Right.
Like, for all the abuse Torres has taken after these, you know, spectacular years he had with Liverpool, you know, here's a guy that's finished up with World Cup medal. He's got a European Championship medal. He's got a couple of them. And he's got a Champions League medal with Chelsea. And he is en route to perhaps having another one or getting deep in the tournament, Atletico Madrid. I wouldn't say he's completely refound that form that made him such a feared striker, but there's a little bit of he does have this habit of popping up at extraordinary times and contributing. So, you know, maybe this might just work out okay for Atletico, the fact that Mandzukic is out and Torres comes in and for a cameo appearance.
In fairness, he did take his penalty really well, didn't he, last time out? And I think we're all watching that against Leverkusen, and he's going to miss this, but he struck it beautifully. I know it's a penalty, but given what he's been through, there was so much pressure on that must-score spot kick, and he got the job done. As for Real Madrid, we've much lamented their demise for a while now. However, in the El Clasico, they lost it, but they played pretty well. Since then, they've won 3 games, scored 14 goals, conceded just one. James Rodriguez and Luka Modric are both back. The last 2 games together, and that to me just tells me why this team is beginning to percolate once again.
You do get the sense that Real Madrid are bouncing back at the right time here, don't you?
Absolutely.
You know, the Modric coming back, I think, is a key part of them. But you know, no matter how well the midfield plays, what it really always seems to come down to is how well that front three plays, in particular if Ronaldo hits form, because we can cut, slice and dice it a lot of different ways, but the bottom line, if Ronaldo hits a goal-scoring streak, there's not many teams in the world could even hope to stay with Real Madrid. So I think this is, you know, we talk of Atletico's chances here, but you know, you flip the coin, look at Real Madrid, you come up with a whole bunch of reasons they're going to win this game as well. And I think I agree with you, James. I think the 4 ties are absolutely superb ties, but I think for me, this is the one I really, really want to see.
Yep.
Tuesday's other game, Bobby, sees Juventus host Monaco in the opening leg in Turin. No doubt that I think Juventus had a pretty, I mean, considering the draw, you know, it could have been far worse getting Bayern or getting Barcelona or PSG. But so I'm sure to a certain extent they're happy they're getting Monaco. But perhaps this is a little bit trickier than that. I mean, this isn't as easy as it appears on paper, is it?
Well, it may be a case of Juventus's, the real heavy lifting in this one may actually be the first game at home. rather than the away leg, because I think that Monaco side, as we saw against Arsenal, is particularly in the first leg, is probably a team that's quite well set up to defend deep and to hit on the break and maybe grab some opportunities and make life tough for Juventus. But I kind of felt that we saw more of the true Monaco in the second leg against Arsenal than we did in the first leg. And Arsenal must be still sitting there absolutely kicking themselves for not beating Monaco, because I think when it really comes down to it, I think Juventus are by far a better team than Monaco. And notwithstanding that Monaco do have some good players, like Matinho is a very, very good player in the middle of the park. If they play Pereira Carrasco up front, like he's a tricky and very, very fast counter-attacker. He could cause them some problems as well. But when you cut through, it's a young, perhaps promising team Monaco have, but I just don't think they've got the depth and the quality that Juventus have.
Kondogbia has been really good as well for Monaco, and given that Pogba's out for Juve, Pirlo might return. He's been out for 7 weeks now, though, as well. I know Marquezio's healthy again, miraculously, so it could be quite a battle in midfield, but yeah, I'm with you there, Bobby. I think Juve are the class, and despite Monaco looking great in that first leg against Arsenal, they're just not a great team. It's as simple as that.
They've come on to a game, certainly. They had a very poor start this season, and they've battled their way up the Liga and got themselves in a pretty good position to push for another Champions League spot last year. But in the overall kind of scheme of things, I still don't think they're one of the best eight teams in Europe.
PSG take on Barcelona. PSG, of course, beat Chelsea. Barca beat Man City. This is another of probably the two glamour tilts in this round of games. PSG, though, missing Ibra from that red card, that ridiculous red card, which shouldn't have been red card in the last match. Verratti's out as well. David Luiz is out. It's a real shame, isn't it? Because strength for strength, 11 by 11, as we saw in the group stage, these are pretty even teams.
Yeah, and you go back to a couple of years ago when they played. It was down to away goals. Got Barcelona through on that one. Verratti, I think, obviously Ibrahimovic is a massive loss, because Ibrahimovic goes so do PSG so often. But Verratti is, I think, a really, really good holding midfield player. I think he plays with good confidence. He doesn't seem to get hustled into mistakes. He retains the ball very, very well. He 5 years' time, we could be talking about one of the premier holding midfield players in the world in Verratti. But Maturi's there. I find him a really interesting player to watch. His energy levels and getting round that midfield, and the ability to link defence with attack and getting back and breaking up plays as well. He's immensely important. I think he's immensely important to PSG, and I think that might be one of the keys to this game is whether he can get in amongst the Barcelona midfield and upset them. And I'll throw this one out to you guys, and I'm not suggesting PSG are going to win the Champions League, but after that display against Chelsea, particularly in the second leg, the thought came to mind is that looked an awful like the Chelsea side of 2012 to me.
Yeah,
you just look at them and the resilience they showed, and you seem to go, there's no way, and they just kept on going. I thought, my God, I've seen this picture before. It was 3 years ago.
No Di Matteo, though, obviously, for this team. But
That's true.
But I mean, and it's funny because that's a comparison, though, because Blanc's on his way out, fairly or unfairly. Di Matteo was essentially on his way out as well.
Yeah,
for Chelsea. So these lame duck coaches getting the most out of their teams.
Yeah, no, it was that comparison struck me, the resilience they showed in that game, and the unwillingness to just roll over and accept what seemed to be their fate. I came out thinking a lot more positively about PSG after that game than I did going into that game.
How much, Bobby, if at all, is this possibly a defining moment for PSG? Because we all know the story. They've spent millions and millions over the last few years, and it's you don't make that kind of investment just to do well on the domestic front. You want to win European championships. So they've never quite really broken through. This is a Barcelona side that they've faced in the group stage. They have been eliminated at their hands previously in this tournament. Is this going to be it for them in terms of defining who they are? I mean, in terms of making it through to the truly leading European club football?
I think that's a good point, Joe. I think it very much could be, because I think although Ibrahimovic has scored in goals, let's face it, there's not many players get better after age 32, particularly players that play in forward positions. So, you know, as Ibrahimovic begins to fade a little bit each year, it's difficult to see this PSG team that's so reliant on him. How do they actually go replace him? Particularly when they're talking about Cavani moving. Cavani does not seem to be happy there. If he moves during the summer, then, you know, there's a potentially heir apparent kind of situation that's gone as well. So, yeah, you do get the feeling that if they're going to do it at all, like they're leading the league, they won the League Cup, they look like they've got a very good chance of winning the French Cup as well. But you're right, this is the one that defines teams, is being able to win in Europe. And if they don't win it, if they don't go all the way and win it this year, then it might be a bit like that Lyon team from a few years ago.
Yeah,
it just gets to the stage where they've got they've done their bit, and then they've got to go on a rebuilding phase, and it just isn't going to happen for them.
Hey, Bobby, is a quadruple the only way Laurent Blanc returns next year?
It'd be pretty hard to fire somebody after that, wouldn't it?
It would.
Only Abramovich could do that, I think.
Yeah, although
or Real Madrid,
Bayern Munich. Heinkes. Treble, right?
Yeah. I think there you look at extenuating circumstances.
Yeah.
In terms of Guardiola available and Heinkes, you know,
yeah,
it's not getting any younger. But you know, the only other team that could fire a manager after doing that would be Real Madrid, because they did it not playing attractive enough football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the players weren't good looking enough. The guys he brought in, right? It's the Real Madrid way. Oh, boy. Wow. Porto take on Bayern Munich. Bayern are just, I mean, they've been ravaged by injuries all year long. But look at this list right now. You've got, Ribéry, Schweinsteiger, Robin out, Alaba's out, Javi Martinez is out. It's just incredible. That being said, they're playing Porto, who are without doubt a dark horse this year, but they should still be enough, shouldn't they?
Well, it comes down to squad depth, doesn't it? When you start, when you look at Bayern and you look at the team that they're going to put out as a potential starting 11, it still looks like a pretty good team. And they've got Lewandowski, who really took, it's probably unfair to take time to settle, because there's always going to be little lulls in goal scorers for him. But he seems to have come on to a really good game at the moment. Maybe, and this is where Bayern have perhaps got the break, because I really don't think, to get past Porto, Bayern have to be at their best. I think they can get past it with a group. I think you've got to look beyond that and look to the potential semi-final, where Bayern might have to be at their best to get beyond the semi-final. That's when they need some of these players back. I think they've got more than enough in the tank to be able to get past Porto. Porto top eight's probably the limit for them, I think. But I remember when we did this show a few weeks ago, we talked about what Shakhtar Donetsk needed to do was get a result in the first leg. They at least gave them a chance in the second.
Right.
And that's what they did.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and then this chance disappeared because Bayern scored seven goals. Which just goes to show the best laid plans and all the rest. But I think Porto are pretty much in that same situation. They've got some good players. They've got some injuries as well. Martinez has not played for a while as well. Danilo looks like he's on his way to Real Madrid. So Porto model, they bring players in, they develop players, they sell players, they start again. Seems to continue, and that is good enough to get into the last 16, good enough to get in the last eight, not good enough to get them any further.
Well, it's an interesting point you raise, because, you know, for me, I was quite impressed. I know it was only Basel, but I liked the way that they managed that tie, and they were missing, you know, as you said, Jackson Martinez and a few other players, but they've had some, you know, despite their injuries and their absences, they've done quite well to get to this point. I think Quaresma has played, you know, probably some of his best football in quite some time.
Well, I think you look at some of the players they've got, like the way they kind of develop these players, like Hector Herrera, who I remember from, he really caught my eye when you go back to that Mexico 2012 Olympic team.
Right.
Like, he's a player, I think, is going to find his way onto a bigger team. That's just the model they've got. And I think they've got a very clear understanding of what their aims are, what their targets are, and what constitutes success for them. Constitutes success is being able to win domestically and getting good runs in the Champions League. I just don't think that when you get right down to it, you look at the depth of talent they have and the competition they face week in, week out in terms of the domestic league, not to belittle what they do, I just don't think they're equipped to go much further and not equipped to beat a team like Bayern.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out, and it's going to be a fascinating week and an exciting week, and you can catch all the games on Sportsnet starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Tuesday, and of course, you also have the Europa League on Thursday. Bobby, as always, great job, mate. Hope to speak to you real soon.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Bobby.
Bobby the Brains McMahon. So what's the one? You're looking at Juve, obviously, right? That's your favorite.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, but you said it quite correctly, James. I'm really looking forward to all of them. I think they're all great games. And I know on paper, Bayern is going to roll over Porto. I really think that's going to be closer than it is with all the injuries that mm-hmm. Bayern has. And Porto, like I've been following them closely in this tournament, and I've been quite impressed with the way they've just kind of managed everything. They're a solid side. I think they're going to give Bayern a real game at home in the opening leg. And if they can keep that close, then they're not going to do a Shakhtar. They're not going to lose 7-0 in the second leg, even without Jackson Martinez, who's a key player for them.
Sure.
So I think that's going to be a lot closer than people think. And I think PSG and Barca is set up to be, mm-hmm. Very dramatic. And obviously I've got, special reasons for wanting to watch Juventus and Monaco and Madrid derby. Mm-hmm. Another great one. So it's four great matches, really.
For sure. All right, we're back on Thursday with the other idiots.
That's not
Dobby
nice.
And Dunlop. As mentioned, check out Sportsnet for all your Champions League coverage this week and sportsnet.ca for the schedule and all sorts of wonderful things, courtesy of Mr. John Molinaro.
Yeah, we got a lot of preview material up on the website going up today and tomorrow. So check us out. We've got comprehensive preview coverage of this week's games.
Well, hope you enjoyed that, everyone. In the podcast. Cheers very much.